Welcome to Down Among the Donkeys, a podcast from the Donkey Sanctuary. In 13 episodes, we are telling the story behind the founding of one of the biggest equine charities in the world. Down Among the Donkeys by Dr. Elizabeth Svensson. Chapter 6, The Big Move. Lisa was now doing a course at the same college in London that I had attended, and I really missed her. It seemed a good idea to combine a visit to Ken Burke's at the agency with seeing Lisa, and Ken kindly offered to take us both to a casino in the West End. After a delicious dinner, at which Lisa had three different creamy puddings, we went down to the tables to try our hand at roulette. Once, years ago, when Niels and I were on holiday in Tunisia, I'd actually managed to win £36 on a 2-shilling bet. Anyway, there we sat, me feeling thrilled with my small pile of chips and Ken enjoying watching us having fun, when I glanced at Lisa. She'd gone white as a sheet and was sweating freely. Suddenly, she dived out of the casino and I had no option but to follow. The chips went back to Ken, sadly, and Lisa had to spend the night in my hotel room being violently sick. She was too ill to go back to college. It was those puddings. The most vitriolic letter from a man I'll call Percy awaited my return. In a nutshell, he claimed our advertising was designed to make gullible elderly people part with their money, and that the whole of the Donkey Sanctuary was a facade whose purpose was to collect funds from the public for my husband and me to be able to enjoy ourselves and to run big cars and to subsidise our hotel. His final sentence threatened letters to the Telegraph and the Times to expose our charity. I was, to say the least, worried. I decided to ring the Charity Commission to get their advice on this type of letter. To my amazement, the commissioner roared with laughter when he heard who had written the letter and said, "Oh, you've got Percy now. I think every other charity in the country gets a letter from Percy at regular intervals. Just throw it in the waste paper basket." That afternoon, Niels was sitting quietly working in his office at the hotel when an immaculate Rolls-Royce pulled up outside his window and the chauffeur got out. By the time Niels got to the front door, the beautiful Rolls was driving slowly down the lane towards our house. He rushed to the receptionist and said, "Who was it? Who was it? Are they coming to stay?" Only to be told, "No, I am sorry, Mr. Svensson. They've just come to visit the sanctuary." I was equally startled to see the Rolls glide into our little private yard, and by the time I had got outside, even more surprised to find an elderly lady chopping up carrots on the immaculate car bonnet for our donkeys. Having seen how the rescued donkeys were getting along and fed them with carrots, she gave us a cheque for £100 and went on her way. A letter came from James Mason. Julie and I read it carefully and turned it over and discussed it. The postmark was from Switzerland, and finally, when writing to acknowledge the cheque, I put the words at the bottom, "Are you possibly the James Mason?" The letter came back by return, "Yes, I am the James Mason, and am delighted and heartened by the work that you are doing." Later, he became a patron of the Slade Centre. Planning the great move to Slade House Farm was underway. The house needed a great deal of work, and we decided we would live in one of the flats above the outbuildings next to the house. It had two minute bedrooms, a minute dining room stroke lounge, and a kitchen. The total area was approximately 240 square feet, and to get our large family in was quite a feat. Before we could move the donkeys, fencing had to be put up in the new farm, and I contacted one of the big fencing firms, and their representative came up to see me. We went all round the farm property together, working out where the fences would go to give us the maximum number of fields with approximately 5 acres in each. A proportion of the property consisted of a woodland area, and if fenced carefully, the donkeys could enjoy the odd forage through the woods, obtaining many kinds of trace minerals from the various tree barks. The slope in places was almost vertical, and Mr. Benton and I spent a very difficult 4 hours covering every inch of the boundary, clambering and scrambling up banks. He was exhausted by the time we returned to the farm, and I didn't feel all that much better. A small firm of local contractors started getting the stable blocks into order and made the long cowshed into 5 individual boxes, with a walk along the back so that we could feed the hay into racks and the food and water into troughs without having to actually enter each stable. There was a tremendous air of activity all around the farm area. Herb Fry's son, John, had a good agricultural training and had been working for some years with a large local farmer in a neighbouring village. And knowing Herb's excellent qualities, I decided to have a chat with John before I appointed any staff for Slade. He was a typical young Devonshire farmer, tall, well-built, and full of fun. We immediately liked each other, and he struck me as the ideal person for the practical side of the donkey work. He agreed to join us and with his wife Monica moved into the 3-bedroomed house that we had bought with the farm property. Every field needed its own shelter, and so another trustees meeting had to approve the fencing, which was going to cost £6,500, and the building of a £600 shelter in each field. We certainly did not have sufficient funds to meet the bill. As usual, I was relying on my guardian angel to produce a miracle, but fields without shelters were no use to our poor old donkeys. The day of the great move came, and with all our furniture in storage, Niels and I and the children moved into the tiny flat on the 28th of February 1975. The old arga was being taken out of the farm kitchen. All the floorboards were up everywhere, as the pipes were leaking, and we took the opportunity to put central heating in, since the house felt extremely cold and was in a very exposed position. It was chaos, but all exciting, adventurous and new. The donkey move was very much easier than we thought it would be. Even the very old and sick ones managed well, and it was surprising how they tackled the journey, quite obviously enjoying their new quarters on arrival. We had now taken 232 donkeys into care. Our first visitor in the tiny flat was a reporter from the Daily Mirror. We were all sitting having tea when there was a knock at the door and a head appeared round the doorway. "Did you know you had been left a legacy of £6,000?" he announced. "No," said everybody, putting down knives and forks. He came into the room. "Well, you have. It's from a man in Pontypool. Surely you have heard of him." "Never heard a thing," we all said truthfully. This particular gentleman had always been teased and called a donkey by his friends. To the absolute horror of all his relatives, on his death, his will quite clearly stated that, because of this, donkeys should get all his money. Everything he possessed was to go to the donkey sanctuary in Devon. Was my luck tailored to fit the fencing bill, I wondered. It seemed, on reflection, that all the experiences of my life had been leading up to my being able to cope with my current situation. My love of animals and children must have been born with me, and I had ample business experience with my father's works and MODEC. Working with the donkeys every day and getting to know them well as I did helped to build up my knowledge of their needs. Walking into a field and looking round the donkeys to see the way they were breathing, walking, or even standing, I could assess their general health and if they were feeling off colour. Indeed, many of them would come up and tell me, as they had grown so used to me by now. A number of the donkeys we received were stallions, because they were entire, as they were known in the trade. They brought many problems to a sanctuary. We had enough donkeys without breeding any more. They are also much noisier and more difficult to handle than geldings, and can be quite bad-tempered. All had to be gelded, quite a costly operation, but once gelded, they become gentle and placid, and can settle down to a quiet community life. Unfortunately, many of the mares arrived already in foal, and foaling down some of these donkeys could be difficult. We would never know the proper date the foal was expected, and would spend night after night going round the stables to make sure that they hadn't gone into labour, with none of us there to help if problems arose. A beautiful, gentle donkey called Beatrice came in just after we moved into the new house. I was called out to the new stables by the donkey's braying, which is their usual way of letting me know they need attention, to find the dearest little foal, which we called Tulip Time, had been born. She was the deepest chocolate colour I have ever seen, and absolutely covered with a long, shaggy coat which almost reached her dear little hooves. It still does grow enormously fast, and Tulip Time has been a great joy to all of us. By now, I had completely stopped breeding donkeys, and my lovely stallion, St. Paddy, had been gelded. A Donkey Breed Society member could no longer keep her stud, and I did eventually agree to take her tribe after first pointing out any stallions would have to be gelded. "You're not going to like what you see, Mrs. Svensson," said the driver when they arrived. "They look all right, but they don't seem to be walking properly, although their feet aren't too bad." The back of the box came down, and a row of anxious eyes and twitching ears met me, but there was something not quite right. Slowly, they came down the ramp and stood in the yard. We decided to put them in their boxes for the night and get the vet next morning. Now, in the trade, cake is another name given for the hard feed given to the animals. Usually it consists of horse or pony cubes or animal stock cubes, which are a mixture of dried grass and nutritive additives, and the owner of the stud had sent a load of cake in with the donkeys. The driver struggled out with the big tea chests. I took the top cover idly off the one that I had helped him with. All I could see was clear plastic wrapping paper. To our horror, we uncovered layer upon layer of confectionery cakes, ranging from Battenbergs and chocolate cakes to ginger cakes. All types, each box was full. We were absolutely amazed and stood looking at each other. I went indoors and rang the lady who had sent them in. "Oh, yes, dear, you got the cake," she said brightly. "Yes," I said. "Why that sort of cake in particular?" "Well, dear, we live next door to a baker, and they let us have as much as we like free, and it says in all the books, feed them on cake, so this is what they have been living on." The vet confirmed my worst fears, and our hearts sank as we examined each donkey. Bilko had severe rickets, and her mother, My Poppet, who was in fact only 3 years old herself, was heavily in foal yet again. "We are going to have a real struggle with these," said the vet. "It's going to take years to get them right." They all had to be put onto a special diet, which included Abidec daily and Cytokon syrup added to their bran mash with black treacle. Slowly the condition of the donkeys improved. The driver who'd brought them in was David Holm. He had recently joined John Fry in the yard and was wonderful with animals. At long last, the new office was ready, and the staff who'd still been at Salston Close moved. We also brought up the safe, and the men levered it carefully into position, whereupon it slowly sank out of sight. Obviously, it was far too heavy for the floor, and there was a hilarious half hour while they worked out how to drag it back up again. It gave Niels and me some very much-needed light relief. Very shortly after the arrival of my poppet and family, another sad case came in. We had received a letter from a Mrs. Bundy, asking us if we could take in a donkey that she said she had rescued from an animal research station. Apparently, they sell donkeys and ponies after they have finished their research work on them. Mrs. Bundy saw Molly and decided to buy her at once. She had been used for womb transplant purposes, and Mrs. Bundy had had her for a short while. However, the field she had been promised in which to keep Molly had not been available, and she felt that perhaps we could take her and give her a good retirement. Dear Molly Bundy, she was well over 30, and how anyone could have expected a transplant to work on a mare of this age was impossible to understand. She was far too quiet to be healthy, in addition to which she was suffering from arthritis and was broken-winded. Her teeth were in bad need of attention, and she couldn't even manage to chew hay properly. My heart nearly broke with hers. We loved her and we cosseted her, and gradually she began to improve a little. She settled down very well with my poppet's group, especially with Fuzzy, one of the very older donkeys from that group, who had bad feet and who moved very slowly and quietly as well. Our youngest daughter, Sarah, was still having a lot of problems with her eyes, and she had already had one operation, but the next was going to be a little more serious. The sister at the hospital sent me off home quite firmly. "Now, I don't want to see you again, Mrs. Fenson, until I phone you at 11 or 12 o'clock, when it will all be nicely over, won't it?" she said, smiling brightly at Sarah, who was lying somewhat miserably in bed. I said goodbye, trying to be brave, but outside in the corridor I asked the sister, "Please let me be here when she comes back from the theatre. I would much rather be near at hand in case she needs me." "Now, Mrs. Svensson," she said, "don't fuss. I've dealt with children all my life, and they are much better without their mothers hanging about. I'll ring you when we need you." Julie brought me interminable cups of coffee next morning, until suddenly the telephone rang. It was 10:30. As I picked it up, I recognised the shrill screaming in the background. "Mrs. Svensson, can you get in as quickly as possible?" said the sister. "Your daughter seems to require you," and the phone went dead. I belted into Exeter, and as I walked into the hospital through its large front door, I could hear the screams in the distance. One thing Sarah has always had, if not good eyes, and that is good lungs, and she was certainly exercising them. Her poor little face was all swollen and a bandage completely covered both her eyes. "Mummy, mummy, is that you?" she whimpered. But as soon as I said, "Yes, I'm here, Sarah," a slight smile broke out over her face, and we didn't hear another word from her for over an hour. Apparently, Sarah was resistant to most normal anaesthetics, and the surgeon who operated on her told me it was the first time in his life a child had ever sat up before the end of an operation, fully conscious on the operating table. No wonder she was hysterical for some hours after. It was lovely to get her back home again and be able to spoil her. One of the good things about the sanctuary is that I am always somewhere near at hand for the children. Judith Forbes was getting a little bit desperate out at Farway by this time. The original numbers she offered to take had been doubled almost to 100, and the large grazing area put aside for them at the top of her farm, which had previously been full of beautiful gorse bushes, now appeared to be a barren waste. She could no longer cope. Once the fencing and building were complete at Slade Farm, the Farway donkeys returned to the fold. As it was only approximately 3 miles away, it seemed a good idea to walk the donkeys over, rather than put them to the terrible stress of being loaded in the wagons and being driven. The Sidmouth Herald thought the idea of advertising for people to help walk the donkeys over was marvellous, and ran the piece for people to telephone us if willing to spare the Sunday to help. The reporter, Nick Stephen, came with his friend Heather Case and a photographer from the Sidmouth Herald, and the paper promised to do us a good write-up. Soon it became apparent that we were going to have at least 2 people to handle each donkey. On reflection, this seemed quite a good idea, as many of the donkeys had never been handled before, and along the country lanes and the short stretch of main road to the farm, there could possibly be difficulties. Spiller's Feeds, who had been supplying us with all our hard feed, agreed to put a watering and feeding station halfway along the route, and the local girl guides agreed to act as runners in case of problems en route. A car flotilla was organised by my father to drive the helpers back to Farway after the donkeys had come safely to Slade House Farm. As the Sidmouth Herald put it in an article entitled, "Gid along, little donkey, gid along. Howdy, partners. Snowball's the name. I'm the one with the straw hat and the long floppy ears, and I'd like to tell you about the best doggone thing that's hit the West since bangers and beans. I'm talking about the great donkey drive on Sunday, when hundreds of folks moved me and my buddies from Farway Countryside Park to Slade House Farm near Sidmouth. Mrs. Elizabeth Svensson, the boss of the Big S Ranch, reckoned she needed a bigger spread for her donkey sanctuary. So she up and sold her old homestead and put the money into buying a great new place at Salcombe Regis. Once she'd taken over the new range, she had herself a powerful headache. How to get me and the other 100 in the herd up there? Sure, she could have used the wagon, but come sundown, she'd have been plumb tuckered out, and half of the herd would have been at Salcombe, whilst the other half would be at Farway. Then she had a great idea. Hire some drovers from outside and let them move the herd on foot. So, on Sunday, we were all rounded up into the corral. Crowds of people were there. There were the drivers, the girl guide helpers and some men from that newfangled thing they call television. One by one, we moved out and set off across the prairies of East Devon. I was one of the first to get going, with my 2 drovers, Heather Case and Nick Stephen, from the good old Sidmouth Herald. The plan was to move the herd a couple of miles to the Long Chimney Ranch and stop for some chow. Then we'd set off again, so we would be at the new ranch by high noon. Now, as some of you good folks probably know, donkeys can be mean, stubborn critters when they want to be. I'm a good donkey myself, and I don't give any trouble, but when I saw some of my buddies, well, it made me feel ashamed. Some of them kept stopping to eat grass, then they charged off, dragging the poor old drovers along with them. A couple of times I was sure there was going to be a stampede. Then there were the real awkward ones. They just dug their heels in and refused to move. I pitied one or two of the drovers. As you can see from the pictures, you can't make a donkey go where he don't want to go. One or two of the drovers got so bushed, they just plumb gave in, and they and the donkeys were picked up in the wagon. And although 1,000 people volunteered to be drovers on the day, there weren't quite enough to go round, and a few of the donkeys had to travel all the way in the wagon. But most of us kept going on foot. When we got to the main Sidmouth-Lyme stagecoach route, we were a bit worried in case we got mixed up with the wagon trains that were passing through. We needn't have worried. The local lawman, Marshal Holsgrove, was on hand with a posse of men from the Sidmouth Sheriff's Office, and all went smoothly. We made good time to the donkey sanctuary. In fact, although it took about 3 hours, it seemed so quick that you only had time to say Jiminy Cricket before we were there. Of course, Ma Svensson had to be at the donkey sanctuary ranch to greet everyone, so she went on ahead in the chuck wagon. Later on, some of the drovers got arrived back to Farway in the buggy. Meanwhile, we were turned out into the corral, where we've got us some smart new bunkhouses. I can tell you, when we hit the hay on Sunday night, we all slept real well. Well, folks, that's the end of my story, except for one thing. Mrs. Svensson and me would like to thank all you folks who came and helped in the donkey drive on Sunday. It was mighty kind of you. Yep, mighty kind.